Welcome. This is Christopher Holmes, and this is another Zero Point Radio show through BBS Radio. My website's at www.zeropoint.ca, and I invite you to have a look at my writings, and I put postings up there of what I'm currently involved in. I've just driven out across Canada to come out to British Columbia to take part in the 9/11 Truth Conference held in Vancouver this last week, and we're going to be discussing that today with one of the principal people from the conference. And first we'll come to that, and it's going to be an interesting show today. Dee, I'm going to bring on co-host Dee Nicholson from Toronto area. How are you, Dee?
Not too bad, Christopher. Things have dried out in Toronto a little bit lately, and that's a good thing for the phone line.
Oh, yeah, so good. I heard you've been having a heat wave, have you?
Oh, yeah, we've been having a heat wave. Things have been melting around here, but good. And, of course, the humidity is a killer.
Alfred is with us.
With the level of chemtrails and everything else going on, by the time you try breathing, you're choking outside. And so a lot of people have been hibernating in their homes. And it's not been great. I think the animals are suffering a lot.
Yeah. To have all those poisons in the air, that's one of the most fascinating things, Dee, that's happened to me during this trip, is I've met the woman who runs Vancouver Skywatch and Canada Skywatch, all dealing with chemtrails. And I've been giving copies of my videos on chemtrails out to people and making a lot of connections. And then even I came up to this place, Lillooet, to a native reserve north of Vancouver, where they're having the International Indigenous Leaders Conference or gathering. And it's an absolutely wonderful event, and the local native band feeds everyone like all three meals a day, and performances of dancing and all different speeches on saving the earth and saving the water and such. So it's been quite inspirational. And then so I was up here at Lillooet, and then who do I bump into? A person who has Skywatch Lillooet. And so this whole tale of the chemtrails is, I've been very conscious of that traveling across Canada. And so we've lined up two shows. Now we're going to do a whole show on chemtrails. So I won't lead too far astray at the moment. But it's been an adventure for me to be traveling like this. I'm going to spend another week in Vancouver, and because there's going to be a major Vancouver peace rally next weekend, which apparently drew 30,000 people last year, which in Canada is a pretty major event, Land of Sleepwalkers.
That should be pretty interesting, because I'll tell you what I'm noticing out in the street is a lot more people are starting to, twig into the idea that, your government's not necessarily your friend. And
they don't love us. They don't. They're not benevolent.
Well,
with
the passage of Bill C-38 in the past week, they changed the face of Canada forever. And unfortunately, despite all of the activity, what we've had is we've had people who were trying to get 13 members of the Conservative Party to vote against that bill and beat it. And unfortunately, out of all of them, they couldn't find 13 loyal souls to Canada.
Your guest is with us.
Not 13. It's just getting horrendous. The gap between government and the people has never, ever been wider since feudal times, as far as I'm concerned. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And as that happens, of course, everything that we ever knew as government has changed so much that a lot more people are starting to notice.
Yeah.
Some people, it takes one drop in the bucket of white paint to spot the black. Others, you have to mix it around a whole lot.
Yeah.
Anyway,
oh,
I guess we're now informed that our guest is with us.
Yeah, so I'll let you introduce. Oh, well, I'll let you say something about Alfred. Well, or maybe I should actually, because there is something I really wanted to say.
Should, because you've just been with him in Vancouver, and you were there for a whole bunch of hoo-ha. So how about you get started and let me jump in as needed?
Well, I'm going to say hello to Alfred, and then I'm going to take the floor just for a moment and then give him time to speak. Welcome,
great.
Alfred. Thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. I hope that my voice is coming through and that I don't have to shout, because you guys are coming through rather faintly.
Well,
and there seems to be interference on my phone.
Alfred. You're fine on this end, Alfred.
You're quite faint to me. So you're quite faint to me, but I'm also in a noisy setting myself a bit. But I think we'll be able to manage.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
Alfred has a background in law. He wrote a book, Exiopolitics, and I think even coined the term, considering like our relations with off-Earth entities and other beings, and looking at that possibility. He's been involved in this war crimes tribunal lately, and I hope we'll find time to talk to Alfred about that today. But just to say, in regards to the 9/11 conference, Alfred played the role of, with each speaker, he came up and he had them take an oath and to state their name and to swear that they were to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. So he added this whole kind of legal aspect to what we were doing, in the sense that then the speeches were actually taken and considered as evidential area materials to build a legal case. And so it added a whole flavor to the conference, which was just, I was so moved by it, and I was so moved seeing people like Jim Fetzer up there swearing, and this is testimony. It was like, wow, imagine what this would mean for the world if one day these people are called to task for their crimes against us. And Alfred added a really nice presence, consistent presence through the whole conference and played such an important role. I'll pass it over to you, Alfred, and let you begin really wherever you'd like. You know, if you want to fill in a bit more of your background, or we can talk. I would like to talk about the 9/11 conference first, but then I would like for you to have time to talk about the War Crimes Tribune.
Us. And let me just bump in one second here. Alfred, please do give some of your qualifications, because I think it's really important for people to understand that both in the 9/11 conference and in the Kuala Lumpur tribunal, that the level of accreditation of the participants in both cases is very, very high. I know you have a Juris Doctor, a Doctor of Laws degree, and that you have huge experience in the law area. So as far as I'm concerned, you're supremely credible. As far as statements and oaths and everything is concerned, I think people ought to know that right from the get-go. So please, go on from there.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, you know, this is very, very challenging for me, because my landline has been blocked. Your radio station can't get through to it. And I'm on my cell phone, and it's very difficult to hear you. And I don't want to strain my vocal cords, because I don't know if I'm being heard or not. But and we have already had two death threats to the witnesses, and I have issued an official statement on behalf of the judges. So what I'd like to do, with your permission, is to read a news article that just came out on the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal, which I've sent copies to you both just prior to airtime. I sent.
Yes, I see.
If you go to your emails, you will see that there. Hello?
Yes, we've got them.
I've got them. Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, I can't really access mine.
Okay. It's very difficult for me to do question and answer today because I can hardly hear you.
Well, you go right ahead,
so,
Alfred.
I would rather we give you the floor and just let you can share freely.
Sorry?
Go ahead, Alfred.
Thanks. Okay. The people can get this article. It's linked at my website, exopolitics.com, right now. Just go there and you'll see it. It's linked, Breaking Exopolitics News. And just click on that and I'll take you right to the article. The headline is 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal expected to issue indictments in 9/11 events around Labor Day 2012. Vancouver, B.C. The 9/11 Tribunal is a citizens' tribunal of conscience that was duly constituted by the 9/11 Vancouver hearings, June 15 to 17, 2012. Alfred Lambert Weber, one of the judges on the tribunal, states, as a duly constituted citizens' tribunal of conscience for the events of September 11, 2001, the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal has jurisdiction under natural law and justice, declarations of natural law such as the UN Declaration of Human Rights, international humanitarian law such as the Geneva Conventions, and natural laws such as national, state, and provincial criminal statutes prohibiting murder and conspiracy for any jurisdiction whose citizens died in the World Trade Center on 9/11. The 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal was convened by a worldwide community of citizens who participated in the 9/11 Vancouver hearings in Vancouver, B.C., and via streaming internet from diverse locations around the world, including the United States, India, and elsewhere. During the 9/11 Vancouver hearings, 19 expert witnesses gave sworn testimony as to names, titles, and implicating evidence for individuals, each of whom acted as part of a common plan as a leading co-conspirator in the events of 9/11, and for whom they are aware of prima facie evidence that is sufficient to raise a presumption of fact. Following the hearings, these 19 sworn expert witnesses and additional expert and eyewitnesses on 9/11 have been requested to file further written submissions and affidavits with the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal on or before July 15, 2012, as to individuals for whom there is prima facie evidence that they acted as part of a common plan in the events of 9/11. Each expert witnesses is being asked to provide a detailed summary of implicating evidence for each such individual named. From these evidentiary submissions, the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal plans to develop and issue an information and indictment of individuals alleged to have participated in a criminal common plan and conspiracy to carry out the events of September 11, 2001, Labor Day 2012. The 9/11 information and indictment is expected to issue around Labor Day 2012. The information and indictment will be accompanied by an evidentiary report setting out the evidence of probable cause for the indictments of the accused. Legal implications of the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal. Following the issuance of an information and indictment against specific named individuals who allegedly participated in a common plan and conspiracy in the events of 9/11, there are multiple venues in which the criminal charges in the information and indictment can be prosecuted and tried, and verdicts and judgments reached and enforced against the alleged accused. A, international law. The alleged crimes of the accused in the information and indictment may be found to violate the Geneva Conventions of 1949 and constitute war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity. As the 9/11 Vancouver hearings, at the 9/11 Vancouver hearings, Judge Alfred Weber stated, the 9/11 false flag operations may qualify as a war crime, genocide, and crime against humanity, inter alia, if it can be demonstrated that the true intent of the 9/11 perpetrators was to carry out 9/11 as a pretext for invading Afghanistan, which invasion and war has been found to be genocidal because of the use of depleted uranium weapons and other reasons. So the legal chain of culpability is there under the Nuremberg precedents of a crime against peace and starting an unjust war. The Tokyo Tribunal for War Crimes in Afghanistan, in an opinion by Judge Nilofer Bhagwat, found that U.S. President George W. Bush and his administration had committed war crimes, genocide, and crimes against humanity through the horrific birth defects and other widespread genetic and health damage caused to Afghan citizens through the use, through the U.S. use of depleted uranium weapons. The 9/11 indictment can be taken by the 9/11 Vancouver Commission to the national courts of more than 100 nations, such as Germany and Spain, that are signatories to the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court for prosecution and enforcement, as well as to the ICC itself. The chief prosecutor of the ICC, to the criticism of many throughout the world, has failed to act on over 400 complaints of war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan by U.S. and U.K. forces, and has privately stated he will not take jurisdiction of 9/11. U.S. Congress. The indictment of the 9/11 tribunal can be taken by the 9/11 Commission to the U.S. State and U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee for the appointment of a special prosecutor to prosecute the accused for treason under Article 3 of the U.S. Constitution, which provides treason against the United States shall consist only in levying war against them or in adhering to their enemies, giving them aid and comfort. No person shall be convicted of treason unless on the testimony of two witnesses to the same overt act or on confession in open court. The Congress shall have power to declare the punishment of treason, but no attainder of treason shall work corruption of blood or forfeit except during the life of the person attainted. There is legal precedent for such an action. In November 2007, a memorandum was presented to senior congressional staff and personally to Representative John Conyers, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, setting out sufficient prima facie evidence of Article 3 treason in connection with the events of 9/11 by George W. Bush, Richard B. Cheney, Donald H. Rumsfeld, and other Jane and John Does. Senior staff acknowledged the seriousness of the allegations in the memorandum. Representative Conyers took the memorandum home to Detroit, Michigan over the Thanksgiving 2007 holidays, promising an answer as to whether he would move on the file after the holidays. To this date, no answer has been forthcoming from Representative Conyers. C, Canadian Parliament. There are various concurrent efforts to have the Parliament of Canada investigate the 9/11 events. As NORAD is a joint Canada-USA function, and 26 Canadians were killed in the 9/11 at the World Trade Center on 9/11. The 9/11 Vancouver indictment can be taken by the 9/11 Vancouver Commission to members of the Parliament and Senate, including the Prime Minister and opposition leaders in the Parliament of Canada, to appoint a public inquiry to investigate and report on possible criminal violations by Canadian persons or U.S. persons, including U.S. government employees or contractors, agents, or other individuals flowing out of the 9/11 events. D, prosecution for murder. The 9/11 Vancouver indictments can be taken by the 9/11 Commission to any district attorney and or U.S. attorneys in the United States of America or to any public prosecutors in other nations whose citizens were killed in the World Trade Center or in the events of 9/11. The alleged accused, co-conspirators, and person acting in a common plan to cause, facilitate, or support the events of September 11, 2001, can each be prosecuted for murder by a U.S. attorney, by a district attorney, or by public prosecutors of a nation whose citizens were killed at the World Trade Center or in any aspect of the false flag operation on September 11, 2001. E. 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal. The 9/11 Vancouver Commission can establish a form of tribunal for a trial of the accused under the 9/11 indictment. This trial would occur before the 9/11 tribunal judges with appointed prosecutors, counsel for the defense, and due process for the accused. A sister tribunal of conscience, the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, has successfully tried George W. Bush, Tony Blair, Richard B. Cheney, Donald A. Trumsfeld, et al. For war crimes in Iraq. 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal and Commission. Judges on the 9/11 Vancouver Tribunal include Constance Connie Fogel and Alfred Lamorat Weber. Connie Fogel is the former leader of the Canadian Action Party, former Vancouver Parks Board Commissioner, former director Kitsilano and Vancouver Community Resource Boards, lawyer with the Defense of Canadian Liberty Committee to oppose what Fogel sees as threats to Canadian constitutional sovereignty. Alfred Lamorat Weber is a judge on the Kuala Lumpur War Crimes Tribunal, submitted a memorandum to the chairman of the U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Committee calling for the appointment of a special prosecutor to investigate 9/11. And was a co-architect of the Space Preservation Treaty. The 9/11 Vancouver hearings were organized by Professor Jim Fetzer, McKnight Professor Emeritus at the University of Minnesota, Duluth, the founder of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. He edited his first book, The 9/11 Conspiracy, organized his first conference, The Science and Politics of 9/11, and produced his first DVD. And co-organizer Joshua Blakely, graduate student at the University of Lethbridge, 9/11 activist, staff writer at Veterans Today, and now the Canadian correspondent for Press TV. Joshua was awarded the Queen Elizabeth II Graduate Scholarship to study the origins of the global war on terror. The 9/11 Vancouver Commission, charged with rolling out the indictment and information to alternative legal venues, includes Professor Jim Fetzer, Josh Blakeney, Kevin Barrett, and John Duddy. Kevin Barrett is a PhD Arabist Islamologist and one of the America's best critics of 9/11. He is co-editor of 9/11 and the American Empire, Christian Jews and Muslims Speak Out, and author of Truth Jihad and of Questioning the War on Terror. John Duddy is a philanthropist with a deep interest in bringing justice to 9/11. So that's a news article that has appeared, and which we urge you to distribute widely to your to your connections. Thank you.
Excellent.
Well, that was an amazing document you read, Alfred. That was very moving to read that, to hear that. Hello?
Has he left us? Hello?
Yeah, I'm going to let you guys carry the ball because my voice is kind of strained.
Yeah, your voice sounds really, really stressed out, Alfred. You might want to try colloidal silver. I'll send it to you in an email. We need you better.
Before Alfred leaves, I wonder, Alfred, could you say anything concerning the death threats against witnesses? I know Jim Fetzer had a death threat and bomb threat in Seattle, I believe, before he came to Vancouver. And I'm hope nothing comes of this threats against the witnesses.
Yeah, there was a threat to Dennis Cimino, a principal witness, a pilot, and he contacted me saying that if he was appeared to be suicided, to make sure that he was to know that he was murdered. And his websites and evidence are being attacked. And so we issued an email yesterday to the entire 9/11 Vancouver tribunal community. Also, the owner-operator of the Denman Theater was issued a death threat, as well as Jim Fetzer, which the Seattle police is now investigating. So it's clear that there are all these forces, which are gatekeeping forces, but now the Vancouver Tribunal is operating under law, under the principles of law. We have jurisdiction under natural law, which is a principle of jurisdiction, a principle of justice, which operates in the universe. So we are going forward. I would prefer not to talk anymore because I have another radio program on the same subject later on the same network and affiliates with Alex Jones, and I want to save my voice from there as well.
Not a problem. Well, I mean, you know, you've contributed so much, Alfred, and I think that in the near future we should have you back and talk more about the Kuala Lumpur issues, because that has, you know, it took another tack, but it has more bearing on who has been doing what to whom, and mostly the whom is us. So, you know, hopefully we can do that soon, and hopefully your voice will and your throat will get much better, and you'll be able to speak at will.
Thank you very much. Well, thank you very much for having me to today, and thank you for treating the Vancouver 9/11 Tribunal as a priority issue. And thank you, Christopher, for participating in this as a sworn witness.
Yeah, thank you, Alfred. It was an honor to be a part of it. And I just thank you for your bravery in the role you're playing here. And you watch over yourself, or keep your eye open. And I feel the same way myself. It's like it was such a powerful event, and I think your presence there really made that was one of the key elements in this conference. So I just thank you, and I hope we can get you back soon as a guest again.
Excellent. Okay.
Take care, Alfred, and I'll send you an email.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Goodbye. Wow. What a statement, AD. I don't know. Just to hear the words in that kind of language, it's like, my God, wouldn't that be a godsend to bring these people to justice?
Well, you see, here's the thing. You know, this is the thing that gets me. Now, there's a lot of people out there who are not only trying to, I mean, like he said, lots of powers out there trying to shut this information up, but then there are also splits being engendered in the movement between, you know, the planers and the no planers and the this and the that, and all of these different arguments of what was done exactly. But when you really get down to it, you look at the information Alfred brought to the table today, and he had information that came from war crimes in Iraq by the very same people who were involved in 9/11, according to the 9/11 tribunal.
Yeah.
You're looking at different crimes of the same bunch of criminals. So, I mean, you know, it's really been something that, you know, we've got more to say on this subject, but our second guest is ready to join us. How about that?
Yeah, and this is one of the fine men who put together the conference, and this is Darren Pearson from Vancouver and one of the key people in the Vancouver 9/11 group. Welcome, Darren. I'm sorry we had a bit of a mix-up concerning times, but you're here with us. Okay, so Darren, we're calling now. He should be here in the moment. It's a bit up to...
A little bit early, yeah. Well, you know, you're dealing with a guy with laryngitis.
Darren is with us now.
Great.
Okay, so Darren is here. Darren, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be there.
Could you tell us a little bit of the background of putting together this conference?
Well, I guess the background is that we were contacted by our friends in the community and asked if we were willing to help out with the conference. And sorry, I just realized I just walked into a yard with the big dog in the yard. Sorry, yeah, I'm just going to move. Forgot the dog was out there. Sorry.
Okay.
And so putting on the conference was we were asked to do the logistics at our end. We didn't have too much to do with the putting on the guest list or anything. We were just instrumental in the setup of the logistics for the venue and some of the other hardware items.
Well, that's great, because every convention of any sort needs the structure behind it. Without that, it doesn't happen. You know?
Yeah, we've been organizers for some events, but in this case that we weren't key organizers. We were just facilitators for the most part, and Vancouver was chosen, I guess, from amongst a lot of other choices. We've got a lot of connections and networking with a lot of other groups.
And so what was your impression of the conference? I know Christopher's got 5,000 select words to say on that subject, but it'd be nice to have a sort of a semi-independent view here.
Yeah, well, there's always criticisms about all the events we get involved in, but I think just keeping the dialogue going is my motivation. I think that especially if we have controversial topics, we need to continue to talk about these things. We can't just say, oh, we can't talk about that because it's divisive and controversial. Well, this is contrary to my belief. My belief is that we don't get to the bottom unless we keep arguing. So I think it was good that we had some of the issues brought up at this conference that haven't been talked about at many places.
Yeah, it's the truth that sets you free, not half of it.
Yeah. Well, and we don't get to the truth unless we continue to talk about it. It's not going to.
Exactly.
We're not going to resolve these things.
Yeah, this is the thing. So, I don't think anybody has answered this yet, but roughly how many people were involved in this thing? Because I know it's pretty big.
In what regard? The conference that we just had? There was 18 speakers.
Was it really well attended?
No, the attendance wasn't all that good, but fortunately that part of the motivation of what we do now is more focused towards what we can produce for the wider audience. We're not going to get people from around the world necessarily showing up for our venue, but because of the, you know, technology today, we reach more people through that. We had it live streaming. It wasn't so successful the first day. We had a couple of sound issues, and even the lighting wasn't so good because of the venue. But we sorted those out a little bit better for the next couple of days, and the live streaming went out, and and we're also editing down that because, of course, there's a lot of dead time in an event like that. So we're going to add it down to a DVD or a finished product, as it were.
Uh huh. Are you going to post that, or are you going to be raising funds with it, or what?
That's a good question, and that's an area that's not my area of involvement. Although I was instrumental in helping with the sound and other things, because we had the venue, we had to sort out how you hook it all together, and had to go rent some equipment at the last minute to make it work, and that sort of thing. But the recording and editing is being done by others. Our friend George from Austin, Texas, is the one who is most involved with the recording, and I guess I'm not even sure who's going to be doing the primary editing. Again, it involves people coming from all different areas, and that wasn't my area.
But apparently all these things are, regardless of whether they're under your purview, people have come together to accomplish this. And
of
you
course,
know, this
that's
is,
exactly
this is,
what it takes.
Yeah, it is exactly what it takes. And, you know, thank heavens we still have our Internet, because I'll tell you, the expertise that you're able to draw on with computer communication is wonderful. You know, you can have people editing down in Texas or for an event in Vancouver. That's kind of awesome.
He actually came up and did the, he sat behind the booth with his two laptops open and doing the camera work. He had two cameras. And,
well, that's awesome too. But I mean, you can still do work from Texas on the file from Vancouver. And, you know, after you've got to do your post-production and all that kind of stuff. But by the time you come out with this, you're going to have something that really shows something. Can you tell us something about the physical setup of the room? Like, was it set up like a court?
Well, I guess it was a theater, a proper theater with a stage. So there was a podium where the presenters made their presentation, and then there was the judges who were sitting at a table on the stage as well. And then after each set of three speakers, there was a question and answer period for the judges to ask questions as well as the audience.
Ah, cool. So it was set up like a witness box and a panel of jurists.
Well, not exactly. The panel, the jurists, I guess. My view of that is the journalists are the people who sit and watch it at any point in time. I feel as a citizen jurist, I'm not often I'm asked about that. Oh, are you, you know, on the street when you're arguing with somebody or debating the question about the events, and you say something and you make some claim, and somebody will say, oh, are you an engineer, or are you a, you know, pilot, or are you something or other? And I say, well, no, the thing is, as a juror, you need to look at all kinds of evidence, and then you can make a fair decision without a background in engineering to be a fair jurist.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see us as the people out there. And I think that's part of what we're getting to here with, like I say, about the controversial aspects of our conference. Unless we continue to talk about it, we don't get the debate going, then we won't vet out these poor theories or good theories or whatever. So that's, you know, what I hope that is coming out of this is the people who look at it decide for themselves the evidences that are presented. We all have to make up our own minds on these things.
Big time. Big time. And, of course, the more minds make up their minds, the better.
Of course.
Yeah. So, Christopher, where are you? Are you there?
Just a few comments on things that have been said. I was very disappointed in the actual number of people that showed up. I must say it was a big theater, and I think the maximum kind of crowd at one of the evening talks was like 100, 150, something like that, and other talks, lesser number. And it's interesting because I imagine a lot of people like may not just want to, I don't think people travel around as freely these days out of the States. They might want to come up and attend the 9/11 Truth Conference and just see what they face, you know, and the kind of intimidation of people. It's a shame. And you know, I see a conference like that, like this is one of the most profound events of our lives and how it's shaped what's happening in our countries. And, you know, you can get 50,000 people out to watch men play games with balls, but you can't get 500 out to attend something as significant as this.
I'm also very disappointed in the turnout, although the crowd that I did speak to, a lot of the people that were there, of course, the crowd largely was not from Vancouver. There were people, there were a man there that drove from Winnipeg, a man that drove from Calgary, and, you know, people, a couple that drove from San Diego. These people came from far and wide for this, but they're dedicated people into the cause. And and I also see, I understand for people who might be as almost as deep into it as myself, who might think, unless they were involved in putting it on like myself, I might also think, well, what's the point of me going there? I can tell you what each one of those presenters is going to present because I've seen them all. Because most of this stuff's been available to anybody who's been looking. For instance,
you know,
your own work. I could go online and see largely what you presented if I had been, you know, looking at your work. You wouldn't have given me anything new.
Yeah, well, you could research all those names of all those people and see their work. And what the conference did was bring it all together. But then you had... See, what I thought was so invaluable about the conference was having Connie Fogel and Alfred Weber there, because then the whole thing, in a way, it became a hearing, and you're taking evidence, and you're going to have a remarkable body of videos of all these speakers and all this new kind of research coming out, ranging from new revelations about the Pentagon and mini-nukes and the destruction of the towers and other oddities about the pilots and the passengers and my work on the media, the fakery of the media and the no-plane theory. Like, it's just a whole level further of complexity. And as you say, Darren, you know, we don't know all the answers, you know, and we don't need to pretend we do. You know, we know the towers and Building 7 were brought down by controlled demolition of some type. So it's the details a bit is filling in how it was done and what was done, and that's important. But anyway, my main comment was just say that we've produced a remarkable body of materials that are going to be made available through YouTube and on the internet and on the DVD. I hope Jim Fetzer might put together another book on the material. So that the importance of that far outweighs the lack of attendance. And it was a very significant event.
Yeah, you know, one thing I'd like to say, too, is that I've noticed, I'm as an activist myself, I'm in touch with a lot of other activists all the time. And one of the things that hits me very strongly is the fact that a lot of activists are starting to get nervous about going to events like that because they know they're infiltrated. They know there are authoritarian cameras watching them, in addition to the ones that are filming the show legitimately. And they're afraid to go out in the street and protest because their faces are going to wind up, you know, being matched on Facebook with sophisticated gear, and then, oops, we're on a no-fly list. There are so many misconceptions and so many fears going on that a lot of these places, and look what they did just recently in the States. They put together a law down there that if you got a politician speaking anywhere, that becomes a national security zone, and you can't be anywhere near it. And you can go to jail for just being in that area. Okay, so I mean it's ridiculous. They're starting to clamp down on every means of free speech possible. And so when you have an event that has such import as does this particular conference and the one in Kuala Lumpur and others around the world, these things are going to be going the way of the dodo bird very quickly if things keep on the way they are. So it's really important that people attend them. It's really important that people share the information that they glean from them. And it's really important that they understand that, as Christopher so rightly pointed out, you can get millions of people watching the NBA on a Wednesday night or whenever they play. Okay? You can get guys watching two guys in a ring pummel each other until the blood flows. You can get them watching all kinds of events, but when it comes to something that actually impacts their future, their present, the future and the present of their children, their grandchildren, and all of their future generations, how many people show up? And what's stopping them? Not just apathy. Now there's fear in there, and that fear is being ramped up.
I think that's really good insight, Dee. Really good insight. I agree with that.
Well, you know, that's a scary thing. People have to be brave to the point of realizing that the more of us are aware, the more of us are open with what we say, the more it becomes a tsunami over what is opposing us. What is opposing us is a network of lies. That's what this conference was designed to expose, and ably did so.
Yeah.
And to that effort, if we can't start sharing that truth, then we are done for. You know, it says in every religion, every spiritual pursuit that's ever existed, it's the truth that sets you free. You cannot have the truth unless you have people willing and able to access it and speak it. And the more they can silence us, the more trouble we're in.
Agree, absolutely. Dee, beautifully spoken. Darren, go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly my feeling.
Well, it's a scary time to be alive. I mean, I used to live in Vancouver. I know it well. But I know that, like, BC people are really, they're sort of like the leaders in terms of spotting things and getting active about things. We've had numerous guests on from BC over issues like smart meters and all kinds of stuff. And Christopher, as you just found out, look at all the number of people who are heads of Skywatch and everything else going on in Vancouver and in BC. BC seems to be a leader in a lot of ways, like California tends to be in the States. So
it was interesting attending this Native gathering, because people there also, like the Native elders are even saying, you know, prepare. Like they see serious consequences coming
down.
They are very, very wise.
They are very, very wise. And you know, and there's splits within their groups, too, that, you know, we hear them talking about. So it seems to be a game of divide and conquer. And, Darren, you're in a heck of a business there, because, you know, you're doing this, I gather, on a rather constant level, bringing up the controversial things and hosting these events that actually, as Alfred pointed out...
That's one of the criticisms, and I know that there were people who didn't come to our event because they felt that what we were talking about was divisive, and I understand that dynamic. I think that's part of what I'm trying to do is bridge those gaps between the divides. When it comes down to it, I'll argue either the lie hop or the my hop, for those people who understand that terminology. I'll argue either side, because either side still brings us to the same crime that was committed, and it means that we need to convict some people of some crimes.
We're
debating the fine points of the evidence, and that doesn't have anything to do with the fact that we all agree that this crime has not been solved. In terms of convictions.
It is what it is, but this go-along to get-along idea doesn't serve any of us well. I mean, it may serve lemmings well, but, you know, I prefer not to be one of those, you know.
Right. It's just unfortunate. The problems that lay behind it are so systemic and extend into our RCMP and C system, military and government. Like, they've all kind of been involved and implicated in it. It's terrible for them, and it's like it's so crazy. Nobody knows how to turn around and step back from it and say, "Hey, guys, let's not mass murder ourselves. You know, let's not have these horrible wars. We've just murdered millions of people." Like, let's stop. You know, I don't know. It's overwhelming and terrible, the same world order that these people are trying to talk about.
Well, I'd like to mention, just on that note, that we have this coming weekend, next Saturday, the 30th, the Vancouver is going to have the 30-year anniversary peace walk, a walk for peace that commemorating the 30 years ago, it built over the course of about 5 years, it really built quite a thing, and it even spread across the country. We're hoping that we'll have some influence here. I'm going to invite all the 9/11 truthers in the city to come and try and be a standout autonomous group within the march, within the walk that that stands out as a 9/11 truth. As a matter of fact, one of our big banners, that the 10-foot blue banner that says 9/11 truth ends 9/11 wars, I think is appropriate for the day. And hopefully we'll get a good turnout for the piece.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I'm going to be out there. I'm staying another week in Vancouver to attend that, and I hope to help out and be part of that, Darren.
It might be interesting if one day, now there's a very active 911 truth movement in Toronto as well. I think it would be real interesting to do an online conference with both groups participating. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it's complicated.
What?
Well, I mean, they do webinars all the time. What's so hard?
Count me in.
Hey, that'd be great. So maybe we can roll that by a few people here and see what happens. You know, the group here is phenomenal. They really are. They are shining stars. They are, for years now, they've been out every Saturday at Eaton Center, which is a major hub for people to be walking around, and there's they even have the kind of intersection where, you know, all of a sudden all traffic stops and it's only people crossing. There's people milling around getting DVDs and flyers and information hot off the presses from these guys for years now. So, you know, putting those kind of people together would be awesome. I think it would be awesome.
Well, I actually am a member of the social media networking called Meetup, and the Vancouver group has a few different meetups, but I'm also on the Meetup in Toronto, although I never go. I just keep tabs of what they're up to.
Excellent. Well, that's the kind of meetup maybe they ought to do.
Sure.
You know?
We need to do more. We need to reach out between 9/11 groups and reach out to other groups like peace groups or people concerned with healthcare and medicines. And we need to kind of be coming together with Native people. And I don't see why Muslim groups don't kind of say, well, I guess I do know why they don't say more.
there's a little matter called trust.
all this hate that's been perpetrated against Muslim people over these issues, you know, it's terrible. But we do need to reach out more like that. And I just want to come back. One of the things that Darren and the Vancouver group have is a very interesting little bus. Maybe, Darren, you'd describe that just for listeners not familiar with
that. Sure. We bought this 1985 retired school bus, and it's... of course, has to be kept up in the same condition that it was in when we got it, in terms of the bus, because it is licensed to properly as a bus and needs to be inspected every 6 months and all that stuff. So it's kept up, but it's also, what we did was we bought it to go across Canada, join the what they dubbed as the March on Ottawa, from Montreal to Ottawa, a 4-day walk. And when we found out about it, we decided we'd go across Canada and join in on it. And so we networked across the country with all the groups. We set up events across the way. We got to Montreal and became a support vehicle for the walk. And for 4 days, I drove it at a walking pace and got to Ottawa for September 11th, 2008. One of the things we did with the bus was set it up with 6 speakers, 2 amplifiers, and a 26-inch screen. So it's a mobile theater. It's a 21-seat capacity, but that, I think, you would be squishing kindergarten and grade 1 kids in that, not with those numbers. It holds about 50 people comfortably. When we drove across the country, we actually had a Rogers wireless stick on it, so we could have the internet as well, and had a wireless router, so I created a kind of a mobile internet cafe, so you could just come on the bus with your laptop and boot up. We set it up most of the time. When we set it up, we have what we call the Truth Bus Theater set up with a 10x10 pop-up tent set up beside it, with our table with all our goodies, DVDs and books that we show off, and run videos that are shorts, some of them 4 minutes up to 12 minutes, and they just loop through some 9/11 shorts so people can come on and off the bus when we get an opportunity to use it on a car-free day or something like that where we are allowed to set up and display it. It's a useful activist tool. But, of course, it costs money like anything, and there's not a lot of funding for activism.
Will you have your bus out? Can you have it parked along the march route next weekend, or is that not possible?
Well, I looked into we're going to be set up with our 10x10 pop up within the march's parameters of the festival. There's a festival with music and a stage over at Sunset Beach, where the march or where the walk culminates, and. We'll have a 10x10 pop-up, but they don't allow us to bring the bus on the grass because of the time of year.
Oh, I see.
Another month or something, they would have allowed us to bring it onto the grass. So we'll be without the theater on the Peace Walk Day. It's not finalized, but that's the expectation.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm considering trying to do a chemtrail activist event there. I might even look into getting a table and just have my DVDs out and some pictures
sure.
of chemtrails, be talking to people.
Well,
they're probably going to They're probably going to give Vancouver. They have a major public event. They want to do a good spraying, especially if you have peace activists and environmentalists out there. It's good to spray them because then they can kind of keep focused or remember the issue.
Yeah, well, all that aluminum funny. Gives them Alzheimer's, so they forget it all.
Yeah.
Right.
Too much.
That's what I find about, you were talking earlier about getting groups together with different interests, including chemtrails and, you know, 9/11 and all that stuff. But what I find, of course, is that when people find the rabbit hole, once they're down the rabbit hole, all of these things become apparent.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it happens pretty quickly because the dots connect pretty much automatically.
Yeah.
There's so many of them that you can't fail to make a picture.
You can't. Pretty good detail in all the dots.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of detail. Sort of like, you know, it used to be one of those connect the dots like in a child's coloring book, and now it's more like a Matisse painting. Pointless.
Things are coming into focus more and more.
Big time. Big time. It's getting very, very scary because of the fact that everything we've talked about has come true one way or another. You know, it's come into reality. And so we are no longer people who have been talking about what they've called conspiracy theories are now being confronted with these things having become everyday facts. So, you know, everybody and their dog knows there's something funny about 911, but most of the population doesn't want to look at it. And that's where we're at now. And I like that position a whole lot more than, you know, the position 2 or 3 days after the event where everybody was going, oh, let's get the terrorists. They didn't even think about anything except we've been attacked back. And so when you see the change in the population going from that point, but the only thing discouraging is it's taken them more than 10 years. You know, how many more decades do we have to play around with this?
It often shocks me or affects me when I'm out at truth or events, and I think, why are we as citizens out here having to demand justice in our society for this massive crime committed against these people who were murdered on that day and then all the subsequent wars? Why are we doing it? You know, we got all these police and military and intelligence. Have they all been so disloyal to their own countrymen and to their own values that they participate in this? Like, is there no shame among these people? It's amazing, you know, and that's, I still hold out hope that the people within these services themselves will turn and say, no, this is crazy. You know, let's bring about justice, like be real police, you know, enforce the real anti-terrorist legislation and seize the assets and these terrorists themselves. Don't pretend it's a bunch of Muslims and try to set more Muslims up that you can cast as terrorists. It's insane. You know, the Canadian people are spending billions of dollars of these services and they've all betrayed the Canadian people. You know, the Canadian military air force is allowing the Canadian people to be sprayed with poison.
Yeah,
like,
you know,
this is insane, you know?
You know, one it's thing, Christopher, let me just throw an idea out, okay? Because an idea has crossed my feeble mind. And I just want to throw it out for your consideration, because I know the depth of inquiry you've gone to when it comes to this issue. And I'm gathering that Darren has done a lot of the same thing. So here's an idea.
I think I'm fairly well researched on the subject.
Yeah, good. Because here's an idea. I've never seen anybody talking about one simple thing. There's a lot of people, when you write to government and say, you know, what's with these chemtrails? And they say, oh, no, dear, you're in your dotage. It's contrails. It's just vapor trails from regular planes. Well, I'd like to know, where are the flight paths registered of these planes with their contrails versus where in the sky are the chemtrails going? Because I can guarantee you there ain't no commercial flight paths registered on those paths. Why hasn't there been a comparison done of flight paths which are registered with the FAA and registered all over the place to chemtrail planes that apparently aren't?
That's the reason for that is when you're dealing with pathological liars, when they're caught in one lie,
who did we lose?
They do, I don't know. When they're, are you still there, Dee?
Yeah, I'm here.
I guess we lost Darren. I don't know if Doug can get him back, but we'll carry forward. Darren, you're not there?
Looks like not.
Yeah, we were talking about the military police, and sorry, what was your last, what you had said, Dee? What did we finish on?
I am trying to bring him back now. I am trying.
Okay, I'm trying to get him back.
I was just basically
commenting on the flight paths.
Yeah.
You know, commercial jetliners, all their flight paths, and military ones, too, are all registered. So let's see them.
Yeah, and what I was saying is like what happens when you catch a psychopath telling a lie? Is he tells another lie, and then when you uncover that lie, he has another lie. Like they're pathological liars. So first they say, "Oh, chemtrails don't exist. You must be a conspiracy theorist." And then you prove that wrong. They say, "Oh, they're contrails." And then, oh, no, they're not contrails. Okay, they're for geoengineering. They're to save you from ultraviolet light.
Darren is back. Darren is back.
That's what they do. They come up like this new emphasis that is for geoengineering. And I agree with that. But I think that's secondary. I think the main purpose of them is to spread illness.
Of course it is. And Darren's back with us, thank heavens.
Sure.
You know, one of the points that I've seen made too is if you talk to Citizens for Safe Technology in BC, they will turn around and say, you know what, that aluminum that we're breathing in through the chemtrails is actually making our bodies more conductive, which means that the EMF radiation that we're all absorbing on a daily basis is hitting us even harder at the genetic level.
Yeah, so, and our smart meters, like, we interact with it.
Yeah, exactly. And smart everything.
Right.
I mean, how smart is smart? Well, smart these days, I mean, these are opposite days. War is peace, peace is war, all that kind of stuff. And now we've got health is illness, illness is health, and now you've got radiation is good for you, and you know.
And these guys are illuminated, Dee. They're illuminated.
I think they're irradiated because they're acting like there's like something inhuman.
Well, that's, I think, there's a real depth and truth to that. There's something really alien and non-human element to it.
Yeah, well, you know what they say, that these bloodlines that that the power elite come from. They're all interbred and all that kind of stuff. Well, I'd say their gene pool is a little narrow, judging from the decisions they're making for us. I'd say their gene pool is a lot too narrow.
So. Our friend Grace Powers has released a new movie called The Zion King, and she talks a lot about inbreeding and the royals there. She talks about the retarded cousins of the queen who, actually, there's a picture of one of them who looks exactly like the queen and has been in...
That would be Charlotte, right? Isn't it Charlotte, her name?
No, that's Grace Powers.
Powers, I mean, the cousin of the queen who's nuts, who's been in care since she was a child.
Yes.
I think that's Charlotte. Princess Charlotte. Nobody even knows she exists, but, you know, she's out there. You can research her, so you know she does, but they don't ever mention
her. Apparently there's quite a few of them that have been pushed off into hospitals and never heard from again.
Oh, well, yeah, that's what they do with them. I'm sure they live in the lap of luxury, but by the same token, you know, they're hidden pretty well. And then, of course, there's the old story about Jack the Ripper and how the Ripper was really a mason who was covering up for the indiscretions of Prince Albert. And and then there was a daughter from that union. Oh, my Lord. I mean, it just gets worse and worse and worse the more you dig.
Okay. I know. The lunatics are running the asylum.
Well, yeah, first they invented the asylum, then they took it over. It's just a little bit crazy. And then you have the brave souls like our friend Darren here, who essentially puts his life on the line to go and organize conferences. And every time, I'll bet you, you walk out of there scratching your head going, what's wrong with people?
Yeah, well, I'm not sure about that, too, but I have a... For my Sufi mantra that I have that I'll share with you is, past the seeker as he prayed came the beaten, the beggar, and the crippled. And seeing them, he cried, "Oh, great God, how is it that a loving creator can see such things and yet do nothing about it?" And God said, "I did do something. I made you."
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. That's a beaut. That is a beaut. I would love to have that one written out.
Just, well, it's on my wall and at home.
It's just wonderful. That's something to share, because it's absolutely true. And, you know, we there's a lot of people on this planet who think, you know, don't worry, God's going to do something. No, we were given free will, and we were given the ability to discern truth from lie. And when you discern truth from lie and you act in righteousness, you know, you overcome just about anything that's out there, because the truth is what it is.
I feel sorry for these people in ways, in a way they're so pathological. It's like they're just so completely false in what they are and what they present to the public. It's just like one great lie in themselves. I think they really suffer and are very emotionally damaged as young children. And so they lose heart. There's something about their heart. They lose the heart feeling and they become egomaniacs, and their mind and their head becomes kind of the master in their household. And they lose heart. They don't have feeling or love. They're incapable of love. They're kind of like psychopaths. They're incapable of love or deep feeling towards other people. And that's what's happened. It's like these kind of degenerate people who are controlled by the three lower chakras, controlling money, sex, and power, they kind of rise to ascendancy. And the people who are upright of heart, who are ennobled and magnanimous or have an open heart or feel compassion and love or truth or righteousness, it's like these people, it's like all the noble ideals of civilization, they've corrupted. And they live in that corruption themselves. In a way, they're really quite pathetic.
Yeah, well, vibration. Here's the thing. I mean, I'm constantly wondering who's more mind-controlled, them or us. You know, I mean, we're getting to the point now where the meek better inherit the earth, because there won't be an earth to inherit if they don't. And what that means to me is, you can be as compassionate and kind and loving as you want, if you put the truth on the table and let it do the fighting for you. You don't have to attack anybody. There it is. What are you going to do with it? You want the sky to look green to everybody? Well, you know, get your spray can out. Call me when you're done.
You know, in my work on consciousness studies through my life, and, you know, my major books are The Heart Doctrine, and it's all about awakening of the human heart. And all the mystical traditions teach, you know, God is known through the heart, or our self, our hidden self is connected with the heart and opening the heart. And one of the words that is very significant is the word courage. Because, see, what I think on this earth, we, those of us upright of heart, we have to have courage. And courage comes from French for la cour, meaning heart. And courage means to have a new heart. So I think it's like, I always see people like Darren and other friends I've known in 9/11 Truth and other areas. It's like somehow there's something noble in them that they put their lives on the line to stand up for truth and justice.
Yeah,
and
actually,
to fight.
Actually, the word courage means to hearten, means to hearten. And what that means, what that means is to use the heart. You know, never mind your mind. Never mind how risky it seems. But when you're brave, what you're doing is you're forgetting all the odds and you're going with what your heart says you have to do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm fortunate that way. I don't have to worry about things like that because I'm just compelled. I'm some obsessive compulsive disorder or something that I don't have to worry about heart or anything. I'm just compelled to do what I do for some reason.
Oh, you're one of them red pill addicts, huh?
Well, whatever the reason, valuable job, Darren, and your efforts are really appreciated. This was an immensely valuable conference. It really was, and despite some of the difficulties.
Makes us go forward. That's all I see.
Darren, is there like a website where people can see what you're setting up?
Well,
like, is there
sure, the Vancouver 9-11, we're a registered society, actually. The Vancouver 9-11 Truth Society has been registered as a society in the province of BC since 07, so like over 5 years now. And so you can be a member of the society, of course, or you can go to our website, V911Truth or Vancouver911Truth.org. Our webmaster, we don't have a webmaster right now, so we haven't been doing a good job of keeping our website up, but we've been around for quite a while doing a lot of different things. And we have a meet-up calendar, so we have our Sunday brunches, which is just for everybody to come and just talk about anything. We don't focus on 9/11 necessarily. We talk about mostly about what's been going on the past week or something like that. And so we keep in touch regularly. We hold the 11th of the month vigil on Robson Square, 11th of every month for over 5 years. There's been representation there by the Vancouver group.
Wow,
so,
excellent.
Yeah, we just continue to do it. It's good. I think the reason why we've sort of kept our focus well is that we did create this society and have a mandate, our constitution. You can see that on the website as well. The constitution's fairly simple. It's only a couple pages long and talks mostly about what we do, and that's to educate. The first four paragraphs start with the words to educate, and that's putting on events and sharing DVDs and that sort of thing.
Excellent. Yeah, it's nice to be able to allow our audience to, you know, do more investigation because, you know, you don't want to be left high and dry. What you want to do is you want to engender this dialogue and you want to keep it going. So
yeah.
It's very good that you've got all these outlets that people can access. And, of course, the Toronto 911 truthers have the same kind of thing going on. I don't know if their website handy, but I know you can find them. They're easy to find. And, you know, the resources are growing, which is great.
I'm sorry, but you're breaking up on me, and I can't even hear what you're saying anymore.
Oh, dear. We're having a rough day with phones.
I think our connection's
broken down. I don't know if you can hear me.
Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
I can hear you talking. Well, unfortunately, I can't make out what you're saying. Unfortunately, I can't continue the conversation. Maybe you'll try calling me back or Carmen. Well, maybe I'll just say goodbye and thank you very much for having me on.
Well, it's a pleasure, Darren, and I'll see you tomorrow because I'm going to be at your breakfast in Vancouver there. You have a group that meets for breakfast, and then I'm going to be doing something, I think, at Tony's house in the afternoon. And who's the group who's sponsoring me in the evening? It's a UFO group from Vancouver, or maybe
He's gone. He couldn't hear us at all.
Anyway.
He couldn't hear us at all, so he's gone. But, you know, maybe you can put that information or do something on the webpage and update it for the next show.
I hope to find time to be on the Internet, do some Internet work this week while I stay in Vancouver.
That would be good because, I mean, come on, you've been on the road for a month now. Right? You've been on the road for a month now, and I know you well enough to know that every little pit stop you made, you were doing something.
Well, that's true. It's true. I go around talking to people. I tried to leave one of my chemtrail movies in each town that I stopped in. So I would conversation, asking any different people. Are you chemtrail sprayed very much here?
I knew you were going to do that. Christopher went viral. Christopher went viral and left a sample copy everywhere. That's too funny. That's too funny.
The connections I've made here around chemtrails are very valuable to me, and I hope. Going to try to arrange a table at the Peace March next week and do a chemtrail activist. I met a major person in the Vancouver chemtrail. And then we met other people. We've got to come together, you know, different people, different groups. And I think in this chemtrail issue, I'll have to send you a copy of my half-hour documentary because at the end of the documentary, what I do, which I feel is so significant, is I quote the Canadian anti-terrorist legislation and show how it applies perfectly to regard to people as a terrorist activity. It affects the health and well-being of a large number of Canadians. It is a terrorist activity.
Sure it is.
Terrorists aren't in Afghanistan eating worms. They're over here in our society.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, basically, when you look at all of this stuff and you start tying these things together, this is where it starts to get scary because we've got a multi-pronged attack on humanity going on right now. It is a multi-pronged attack. It's coming from every angle. We've got, it's getting to the point where our government is putting through stuff that has our doctors and nurses on the streets protesting.
Yeah.
Okay, they're out on the streets protesting. You've got the Vatican is in disarray because they're getting nailed not only for bank fraud, but on top of that, they've got bishops going to jail. You know, over pedophilia. Now you got the Boy Scouts of America under microscopes. You got all kinds of other stuff. And really, when you look at all of that, they're really minor distractions compared to what is really going on. And what is really going on is all of these issues are becoming out of our reach to attack. And when I say that, I say it very carefully because you know, I've been talking about how all these trade agreements that we sign are taking away our sovereignty because they are international contracts to which we are beholden as a nation. And it doesn't matter what laws we've got. Our government basically is making new law when they sign these contracts. They're saying, we're going to abide by this group's laws. And that's right on the World Trade Organization website. It explains that. Well, I just put out an article about a week and a half ago called Sleight of Hand, The Stealing of Freedom.
Wow, nice title.
And in this article, I'm pointing out exactly how, by creating all these trade affiliations, what they're doing is they're lifting our ability to legislate right out of our hands. Because in every area, every sector of our economy, we are tied to some other group. And if you look at the numbers of the nations to which Harper has tied us, he has gone more than five times as many trade affiliations going on. And when we join with CETA later this year, you're bringing in 27 more nations, okay, through the one agreement. So you're talking about all these laws being harmonized between all these people, everybody being run under the same law. Well, there's your platform for a world government. Now I found out in the past week, information is coming out about the TPP, which is another trade agreement that is being negotiated by the United States. Now, I want to point this out because this is really important. A few years ago, I wrote an article called Dude, Where's My Country? And in it, I was talking about how essentially, you know, the laws internationally supersede anything that we've got. Okay, now what you have to recognize is in the health freedom area alone, what you're talking about is the harmonization of the EU food safety directives, which are as draconian as Codex Alimentarius and then some, and they are being adopted now by 27 nations, and through CETA we will adopt them, and if Canada is allowed into the TTP, there's going to be another 20 nations under the same guidelines, and that involves Australia and New Zealand and, you know, the South Asian countries. That's where the TTP is, connected with the United States. Now, you see, that's all one big knit bag that we're being put into. We know that the Australian area of the world down under is all coming under the same kind of regs as the EU, as are we. All these things are being harmonized. All of them are being harmonized. So what you're seeing right now is something really interesting. But another thing I pointed out in that article was that once these trade agreements are written, conflict between groups is inevitable. If you have a bunch of trade agreements with a bunch of countries stipulating a bunch of these regulations, and then a bunch of trade agreements with a bunch of other nations stipulating other regulations, they're automatically in conflict. Who arbitrates between these? Now, you think that's not possible? Look what's happening with the TTP. Canada, despite Harper's absolute delight at the idea of joining into this group, Canada is being kept out. We're only being allowed to be an observer. Okay? Why are we only being allowed to be an observer? Well, this is because the United States does not like two things about Canadian law and is holding them over our head. Change them or we won't let you in. Okay, one of them is our agriculture regulations, most particularly our GBH or BGH hormone, which is bovine growth hormone, which Dr. Shiv Chopra and his team went under, basically they went under the gun, they all got fired for protecting Canadians permanently against our BGH hormone. Well, the Americans have that in their dairy, they want us to have it in our dairy. And so they're holding up on that end. The other thing they don't like is our intellectual property rights. They don't like that either. So you see what's happening is now we are being blackmailed internationally through our trade obligations. Our government can't do anything about it except kowtow if they want in. And if we go in, then we're helping to knit this big sack into which we are all put and tied together. That's it. That's all. Where's our parliament in all this?
Yeah, they're hiding from the Canadian public what they're really doing. I mean, they're doing it incrementally. They're bringing us into this one world government system. And they're doing it bypassing public debate and the Houses of Parliament. And they all pretend they have plausible deniability.
Exactly. And where does that bring us to? Well, that brings us right back to the fact of death threats against people who hold 911 conferences. Okay,
yeah.
Because they cannot allow the truth out if they want the lie to succeed.
Yeah.
So those people who are telling the truth, now I'll tell you, you're a pretty strange breed. They're a pretty strange breed. As Darren was saying before we lost him, he said, I feel compelled.
Yeah, it was interesting, yeah.
You know, and you know, I have to say that most of the people that I know who are doing anything to fight anything all feel compelled. But what I want to point out to those people who feel compelled, okay, if you want to solve anything locally, at this point, you have to do what they say and think globally, because the only way out of these, the only way out of this is to abrogate all those trade agreements. So some of our legal minds have to hop on that one and say, wait a minute, our government doesn't have a mandate, let's prove it. Because they don't.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Christopher, think about it for a moment. Can you honestly think of any society that would allow its government to have the mandate to give away their freedom? Show me that in writing.
People haven't been aware of it. They've hidden it from people and deceived people through all the corporate media to carry forward their agenda. What they've done is treasonous. See, the problem, you know, in a way, I can see why some aspects of world government could have been useful. But the problem is the people who want to form this world government are psychopaths who believe in population reduction and want to enslave the masses and have them as worker bees.
Yeah, well, you see, you're proving a point that I've been making for a long time. It's not about the form of government. It's about the compassion and love of that government for the people that they serve, not own. Okay?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with the form of government. Government can be done, you know, never mind the efficiencies of it, because obviously world government was practically impossible to be efficient. But the bottom line is, if that world government were a benign order of people, then none of us need to fear it. On the other hand, the evidence that we have is that they are the greediest of the greedy. They are the meanest of the mean.
Yeah.
You know, they are the cold-bloodest of the cold-blooded.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, these people are basically vampires sucking us dry because they think they can. And I would remind them of simple math. We outnumber them. And, you know, it's like, Roy Rogers once said, no man on earth can stop a stampede, and I'm saying it don't take that many to start one.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Yeah. It's a very interesting world situation. I mean, what's happening around the world, what's happening in Greece, they're on the kind of border of collapse. I gather this new fellow who was the hope, who was not going to pay off the huge debts and bring in austerity. He was defeated narrowly, I understand. Are you aware of that?
In Greece, you're talking?
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, and I'm wondering about that too, because, you know, I've got a friend who's in Greece right now. She'll be back in a few days, and I'm looking forward to asking her. You know, because I have heard over the last couple of days that a lot of ATMs don't even work in Greece right now, and that there's a lot of panic in the country. So, you know, when she comes back, I just said to her, this is what I'm hearing, or, you know, can you confirm? And so I haven't heard back from her yet, because she's in a small village and there's only one internet cafe. It's Greece, it's not Canada. And
it's so funny, because I just see, like, it's like every nation of the world have these massive, massive debts, and the people are going to kind of lose their jobs and homes and starving and all this kind of chaos. And all that needs to be done is enforce the anti-terrorist legislation, seize the assets of the real terrorists, and you'd pay off all the debts of all the countries on Earth.
Because if they close down the CIA, they'd solve the terrorist problem in a hot hurry.
Yeah, criminals in action. I mean, mass murdered millions of people through this past 50 years. It's terrible what they've done.
Who's been on the ground in these nations in the Middle East where they're having their sort of spring rebellions? I mean, pardon me all the hell, But, you know, when I see that 1.5% of the population were rebels in Libya and all of a sudden they took over the country, that's physically impossible. However, the CIA was on the ground in Libya for 10 years prior to this happening. So, you know, they've been after Gaddafi for a long time because he was doing the right thing for his people. And the IMF doesn't tolerate that. And now the guy who got elected, strangely enough, because the people in Greece, from what I hear, are not happy with the results of their election. Well, how can they not be happy if the election was straight up?
Yeah, so which now we're learning they're not straight up. That's
they're not
a problem.
Straight up. You know, and this tells me one thing. It tells me they're having to hedge their bets against their propaganda because it's not working.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to hedge your bets with that, then you're scared. You're scared.
Yeah. Yeah, good. These people need to be scared. Like in a place like Greece, where's all that debt accumulated from? And what is the complicity of their government representatives through the last decade accumulating that debt?
And how did they get the guy elected who was going to keep them in the midst of all that mire when the Greek people really wanted out? How did that happen? You know, so, I mean, there's a lot of... I live in Greek town. I am surrounded by patrioti, okay? That's Greek patriots. I am surrounded by them. And let me tell you, the unrest in my neighborhood over what's going on in Greece is not funny.
It's not funny.
I mean, these people, they have a culture all their own where, you know, a lot of the men folk in particular, you know, gather in the coffee shops. They're called kafenions. And they gather in these shops, and all they do is either play card games or talk politics or both. And they're very, very much aware of the bank fraud and all that kind of stuff. And you cannot tell me that if the Greek people in Canada are that aware, you cannot tell me that their relatives and friends over in Greece, and all of them have them, okay?
Yeah.
That they don't know either. And you cannot tell me that people are that aware are going to vote for the wrong thing at this point in their lives with everything falling apart around their ears. So how does this election happen? This is going to get interesting as this folds out because, you know, how does this happen? This is pretty strange to me. I mean,
And if as people of one nation refuse to accept the terms and turn the tables on these characters, then that can have a domino effect. It's just like in Iceland, they criminally prosecuted some of the bankers. And
exactly.
In Greece, that's what they need to do. You know, the police and military need to support the people of the country.
Yeah, and I'm wondering how in the flying blue blazes they're going to be bringing some kind of sanction, because you know that the powers that be are going to want Iceland to pay for their temerity in having done what they did. So how are they going to make them pay if making them pay makes it obvious that somebody's playing games? See, it comes to that point where, you know, you can't shoot the whistleblower because it means he's telling the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed I'm going to just take the floor a little bit, Dia, and share with you. There were some things which, to me, as a 9/11 researcher, were really new from the conference, and I want to just go through a few of those. This was so interesting to learn this term. Do you know what a limited hangout is?
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, could you elaborate on it? Well, what I understand it is like a theory or a movement kind of that tells partial truth, and it kind of ties people up in that partial truth, which hence kind of makes it that they're not exploring the deeper truth or ignoring other aspects.
I've got a slightly more, shall we say, publicist view on that, having been in PR and publicity for many, many years. Okay? When you do a limited hangout, what you do is you tell part of the truth and you embellish it with lies in the direction that you want. It's like a little piece of truth, a limited hanging out of that dirty laundry. But then what you do is with the rest of the work that surrounds it, you spin it in a direction so that people think, oh, conspiracy theorists, they're full of crap because, you know, this was said over here and this was said officially. So what they're doing really with a limited hangout is they're tailor-making information. They're tailoring information to keep people diverted from digging in further.
And, yeah, exactly.
And the way that they do that is to try to satisfy as many people with as little information as possible.
Yeah.
That's what limited hangout, it means as little information as possible, just give them, throw them a bone that will keep them busy in the backyard for another hour. That's what a limited hangout does.
For me, it relates to how the A&E groups, architects and engineers, have kind of glommed on the nanothermite and micro-nanothermite and kind of ignored looking at other possibilities like those raised by Judy Wood's work and her suggestions.
Well, you see, this is exactly what I just said. They give you a piece of the information. And then they say, here, doggy, here's your bone. Go chew on that. And, you know, so all these guys, they're just exaggerating or they're just out of their minds or they're just whatever. And this comes into its part, limited hangout is part of plausible deniability.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Plausible deniability means can we do a limited hangout on this or are we really dead in the water?
Yeah. So I think that's a really useful term for people to have. Okay, so that's one thing I learned. Another one of the most interesting lectures for me was Charles Baldwin. And he showed was pictures, like, you know how A&E goes about, do you know about Building 7 and how many buildings came down on 9/11 and you know, and if you're informed you're supposed to say 3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Charles showed was photographs of Building 6 and Building 4. And Building 6 was a building close to the towers and it was blown out from inside out. And all it was a big hole. Like, it didn't have material from the towers coming down on top of it to destroy it. Instead, it was completely blown out. The building was gone. And what he showed in the photographs of it was these kind of circular patterns, which are what are made by mini nukes.
Uh-huh.
And I think, so he is this direct evidence that, well, not only what happened to Building 7, what happened to Building 6? It was blown up. And a huge gaping hole where it was, and you see the patterns. And he talked about the mini nukes and how they can be very directed, and they can be directed upwards, and they leave these imprints. So the material on mini nukes being used was very interesting. And then they had on that woman who was in the CIA, and you know may know her name, Dee. She's the one who ended up being put in jail for 4 years. She had been the go-between between
Lindauer,
the CIA.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes. Susan Lindauer.
She gave an amazing talk and got a standing ovation, and that was, it was most people there that evening, like 150 or more, I think, you know. So, but she spoke excellently, and she was saying, like, everybody in the CIA in the months ahead of 9/11, which I knew that there was going to be a terrorist attack on the States, and they were going to blow up the towers. And it was mentioned to her they were going to use mini nukes. She didn't say mini nukes. She said thermonuclear bombs. That's what she said. So that was what she had as info from within the CIA.
Christopher, thermonukes, that's a type of nuke. Mini nuke, that just refers to how big they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she,
yeah, that's
you
right.
Know, so,
but
you
she
know,
didn't
she's
use
not saying anything
mini
different.
Nukes.
No,
yeah,
but
she,
they would
yeah,
have
but,
to have been anyway.
Yeah. So she was saying that they in the CIA that they were kind of aware that they were going to use nukes on the buildings. So that was common knowledge in the CIA in the months prior to 9/11. So it kind of confirmed what Charles was saying about mini nukes. So that was other evidence of that, even though you could see from the CIA member, like, they had been deceiving her because they weren't telling her that we're the real terrorists. They were pretending that they had information that came that they were real terrorists who were going to do that. So
and
you could see how she was being deceived herself.
Uh-huh. And then you can also tell, because if you remember, even from the news reports at the time, it kind of, you know, people were going, oh, what a blessing. But really, when all this stuff went down, okay, it was at a time of day when there's normally like 25,000 people in those towers.
Yeah.
So, amazingly, you get what, 3,289?
Yeah.
Okay, was the number killed, okay, and probably double that for the number who were present. But the bottom line was that it was vastly underpopulated that day. So why was that?
Yeah, and we know that was because a lot of people received telephone calls not to go into work. And also others had foreknowledge and had moved out of the building, including major firms.
Yeah,
so,
and so what they're going to tell us now, that these guys who hopped on so-called planes with so-called box cutters and took over everything and caused all this, that they were able to do that too?
It's such a joke now. It's funny at the conference. Like, nobody even, I don't think anyone all, the whole 3 days, anyone ever mentioned the Muslims. Like, it's so far beyond that.
Muslims?
Like
what Muslims?
Yeah, like
Muslims?
It would be a joke. If anyone had started to argue that, they would have been laughed out of the building, kind of. Like, it's such a joke that people don't even go there. Like, it's so obviously something else. One other thing that came up, I'm watching time. We got about 10 minutes, and we'll take 5 minutes to kind of close down. But Jim Fetzer was sent a video from someone at Veterans Today, and what it shows is the missile attack on the Pentagon.
Uh-huh.
And Jim showed this in his presentation. Now, this video of this missile going into the Pentagon, Oh, you have? Now,
yeah.
I only saw it once, Dee, and I'm dying to see this again. But my impression when I saw the video is that missile did not enter the screen from the left side, but rather it popped out of the lawn on the Pentagon.
I think
the Pentagon shot itself with its own missile.
Well, you know what? I saw that too, and it, you know, it's a very, very brief clip. And the thing is, if you notice, the whatever it is, I think it's a missile. Certainly doesn't look like a plane to me. Doesn't have a tail section. But,
no, it's a missile. You can see that.
But the bottom line to me is, the thing is on a flat horizontal. Now, if you look at other video that they supplied to the public, and they showed the supposed path of this plane, okay, in the video they showed there was a traffic interchange just on the other side of the lawn. So I'd like to know from where this missile was launched, that it basically, it would have had to have flown over that interchange, which of course is tall enough to accommodate a bridge and an underpass, and yet this thing seemed to be going across the Pentagon lawn at about an altitude of about maybe 8 to 10 feet.
Yeah,
so how is this possible? How's this possible?
It totally makes sense that it was just shot out of the Pentagon lawn.
Yeah.
Just across the lawn. That's what the video, when I saw the video, I mean, I only saw it once, so, you know, I need to get it and view it and to look at it frame by frame. But I'm sure that missile does not enter the screen from the left. It pops out of the lawn and right into the Pentagon.
Well, you know, it might be real interesting to talk to the guy who mows the Pentagon lawn. Because if there's that kind of a bunker, surely to God, he must have hit it with a lawnmower at some point.
Because the thing would have
grass on top.
They know that they have missiles in the lawn of the Pentagon to prevent an attack upon it that can be launched instantly, you know? So they know that these missiles are in the Pentagon lawn. All they did was turn one around. It's amazing. These people are so whacked. They really are. They're just so whacked. I know they think they're illuminated and they're these, they're so awful how what they've done to the American people.
Well, here's the thing. For the most part, the American people have proven them right in a lot of ways. That's very unfortunate. However, I really think they're getting to a point now where it's so ding-blasted obvious.
Yes.
They think that people aren't going to catch on. I mean, come on, it must be part of their plan to create the chaos because people have caught on, but just to have them catch on when they want them to. You know,
because
their ultimate chaos is going to be in crashing the society. They're asking for that. They're deliberately engineering that. So obviously, now all these chickens are coming home to roost. Well, how mad do you have to make the American people be before they will totally turn their back on their own system? They're indoctrinated from birth to the flag, motherhood, and apple pie, these guys. They're indoctrinated.
Yeah,
so how do you break that?
Well, their politicians have sworn to American apple pie and all the while have been betraying them. It's so horrendous. I just can't get over the magnitude of their crime.
Just think of all the money that'll be made in the future, guys writing movies about this stuff.
Oh, yeah, imagine if they ever had a whole generation of movies that were truther movies. They would be so interesting, eh? And portray all these things. Wow. I mean, even if you ever could convert the corporate media over into truth networks, people would be glued to their TV having all these revelations about things. It would be amazing.
Then we'd watch the rainfall of bankers jumping out the top floors.
Oh, very clever, Dee.
Talk about frogs raining from the sky. We'd have a plague of bankers.
What an image. I just pray for justice on this sacred planet.
This
madness is just...
The universe is set up to do that. It's a binary universe. You know it. I know it. Everybody in science knows it. Everybody who knows anything knows it. It's a binary universe, positive, negative. And that's what makes the law of karma work. Because of that, I have faith in the law of karma because we are an electrochemical universe, and that is going to right itself because that is the nature of an electrochemical body. That's what it will do. It's like I used to compare Mother Earth to an old dog who had fleas, and one of these days she's going to start scratching.
Oh, yeah, Blavatsky uses a similar analogy, and she compares the Earth. It shakes every now and then and shakes all the fleas off it. We're down to the end of the hour and kind of end on time so we can give the studio a bit of time to make the transition to the next show.
Give poor Doug a break.
You give your website out, contact information.
We're at www.thenhf.com. National Health Federation, and I'm the Canadian Executive Director, and we have a lot of resources for people there in terms of natural health. So you can go there and browse around and have lots of fun.
And I'm going to try to find time this week to work at my website, and I'm going to try to put the links to some of your writings and articles up there.
Yeah, well, I'll have to forward some of them because some of them have just been sent around on the internet, but there's one in particular, the sleight of hand article, that I would dearly love to see promoted as much as possible because it really shows what's being done by this government as compared to what's been done by other governments. Before Harper, we came in with four trade agreements. He's got about 24 of them on the table and about 24 more he wants.
Well, let's get that article up, Dee. Try to get it prepared. Just even send it to me as a text file, and I'll create a web page for it. It'd be good to get the link up on our site.
Yeah,
okay.
It's a Word format. I'll send it to you today. But, thank God for places we can still speak, eh?
Yeah. Yeah, thank BBS Radio hosting this show. We've got quite an active show going, Dee. We've just had a series of really very profound shows on Zero Point Radio. Really,
yeah,
thank you for being part of it.
All of our shows are getting really profound. You're absolutely right, and it's liable to get more profound from here. So I hope our listeners come back every couple of weeks and, you know, pick up some more.
Yeah. And just to remind listeners, please visit my website at www.zeropoint.ca. And I'm most pleased with my 1137 book, if you want my take on 9/11 and what's happening in the world. I think that's a very interesting book that I still stand by. And it's written in a way to try to break people's conditioning in a way to get them to grasp the enormity of what's been done to us. Okay, thanks, Dee. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We're going to have Jim Fetzer on part of the show and someone else from the conference on the second half. And then the week after that, we'll be on Chemtrails. And then after that, we'll reconsider as time goes by. Thanks, Dee.
Thanks, Christopher. Take care.
Okay, BBS, goodbye. Take care, all. Remember yourself. We've got to turn the tide on these people. Thanks.